This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
The Aftershock Central Podcast, episode 26, Jack! Woohoo! And
that's like a total random number that means nothing.
It means nothing, but it's more than 25.
It is.
And it's 2 weeks in a row that we have an episode out.
Yeah.
That's exciting, except you weren't here last week. Ronnie's not here this week.
And you weren't there during the interview.
Well, I wasn't there at the one before. I might not be at the next one. Right. I've got a lot going on this week and next week, so.
Mm. It's a two-man podcast. We like to keep our hosts fresh, you know?
That's right.
It's like sports. You put somebody on the bench, and then they're fresh the next time around. Because we want to deliver the best quality, and that's the formula we've come up with. It's systematic. It's not because we're lazy slackers that can't even show up for our own podcast.
That's pretty genius, I got to say. I'm impressed, Jack. I'm impressed.
I can BS with the best of them.
You and I were at Heroes this past weekend. Not together. We were talking about that in the pre-show. We did not run into each other. And, that place is a dead zone for real.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully you don't have any 911 emergencies that you need to make a call for. Because you ain't getting the signal.
If you ever need to use your phone at Heroes Con, good luck. Go outside. Because in the building, no. Well, the problem is it's downstairs, right?
Yeah, I think it's underground.
Yeah, it's on the ground.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't for that, you'd probably be okay. But
because they had Wi-Fi and they were, I kept asking. They were like, no, if you want Wi-Fi, just go upstairs.
What?
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
They wouldn't give it to me. I was tempted to ask Joe. But I was like, that's cheating. I better not do that. I don't know if he'd give it to me anyways, but if he did, I'd be happy and feel kind of bad at the same time.
I don't know. He might have. I didn't even think about doing that. Because I try to connect to all the hotspots, and they're all required logins. And I was like, I don't have time for this crap.
None of them work. I tried them.
Oh, did you? Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm saying they required a username and password.
Well, because they're only for vendors.
Yeah, right. We know some vendors.
Yeah, that's why I was saying I was kind of cheating. I was thinking about it.
Anyway,
Joe was like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that. Then I look like a jerk.
Yeah, that's true. That's so true. I didn't do it. Did you get to go to any panels?
The only one I went to was the Southern Bastards panel.
Oh, yeah. How was that? Dude, we went like right by each other because I was at the next room over.
I wasn't able to stay.
Okay.
And I was really looking forward to it. Jason Aaron and Jason Latour. And I love that book. I've been reading it since it first came out. And I love every single issue of it. But it's an edgy book, right? It's not for kids. It's very adult-oriented. And I got in there, and I have my 10-year-old with me. And I take him I didn't take him to Wolverine, but I take him to, like, some stuff that's a little edgy. But we got in there, and Jason Latour was just like, F this, F that. I mean, immediately. Like, and I don't know what he wasn't even... He wasn't talking about anything important, and all the eyes just immediately went on me and my son.
That's funny because I got called out as well.
Yeah.
I went to two panels. I went to the Horror Writers panel, which I'm going to post probably on the Nerdy Legion feed. I thought about doing it on here because Donnie Cates were there and Paul Jenkins was there. But there was very little Aftershock talk, although Donnie did talk about baby teeth quite a bit. So I don't know. We'll see. But it was a Horror Writer show, and I think they started, and I can't remember if it was Paul or Donnie dropped an F-bomb. And then and then he's like, oh, you're here with your little kid. Because I had my 6-year-old with me.
Right.
I had both kids with me, but the older one, she was walking around the floor while I went to the panel. So I had the six-year-old, and he's like, he said something about, you know, like, that's what you get for bringing your kid to a horror comics panel.
Right.
And I was like, nothing she hasn't heard. It's fine. You know?
Well,
but yeah.
I would have done that, but I looked around and nobody had kids in there. And I was like getting the evil eye from other people. And I was like, oh, let's get out of here, Ethan.
Who cares, dude?
I don't know.
Look, here's the thing. So I'm a big horror fan. I have been for a long time. And most of it is my dad's fault. Because, I mean, right. I was watching like Nightmare on Elm Street with him when I was like 5 or 6.
Yeah.
You know, like my daughter doesn't like horror at all.
Right.
Like she sees a guy with a knife and she runs away.
Yeah.
Right. You know? Just like the thought of something horrific happening scares her. but I was like, you know what? I want to go to this panel. I'm not going to send her to the floor with the other kid. So she's just going to have to deal with it and come with me, which is fine. Like she ended up taking a nap. So that worked out.
Yeah.
And then I did. I went to the Garcia Lopez and Lee Weeks panel, which is awesome because they were doing live drawing at the panel.
Okay. Oh, cool.
And I'm a big fan of both those guys. So
yeah,
it was awesome.
Joe didn't do one, did he?
No, there was no Aftershock panel.
Yeah, I looked and I didn't see one.
Yep. Heroes is it's different than other cons though. Like if you notice, a lot of it, it's just like artists and the vendors, right? Because mm-hmm. what publishers were there? Ominous was there, Aftershock.
Yeah, small guys.
Skybound, Zenoscope, and I think that's it.
But I'm not used to like Marvel or DC going to any of the cons around here. Like they don't go to NC or SC.
Nope. Now, Marvel had a booth at C2E2.
Yeah, that's right.
But
that's semi-big time, though.
Yeah, that's true. But,
yeah, and Heroes is weird because it doesn't have those big names, but it's huge. And I think it's bigger than SC Comic-Con.
Yeah, it is.
At least although this year,
I think SC within a couple years will be as big as Heroes.
Oh, it's growing.
Oh, yeah, it's growing a lot.
I'd only been the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's growing a lot.
Well, but Heroes, it was pretty small not too long ago also.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe the industry's growing.
I don't know, that depends who you ask.
Right.
It depends who you ask. It was good. It was good.
It seems like comics, are, with all the movies coming out, it seems like it's going a little bit more mainstream,
mm-hmm.
doesn't it?
Yeah, I would think so.
I don't know if that reflects in the sales. Of I don't know the actual about issues, but
yeah, I was gonna say I don't think it reflects in the sales, but I think it reflects in like Comic-Con attendance.
Yeah, Comic-Con attendance and toy sales and
yeah, yep, merchandise, all that stuff. Yep. But Aftershock was there. Joe was there. Joe's always awesome. So we got a shot. Shout out, Joe. I talked to him for a little bit, but the thing is, like, every con that I go to, I see Joe.
Right.
And we talked about this a little bit earlier. Like, once you see him that often, you end up like running out of stuff to buy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the problem I had, because we just talked about this, but I'll say it again. He always gives you, I don't want listeners to expect this, but he's been really cool with us because, I mean, this is good. This podcast is good publicity, right?
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
People listen to it and maybe they buy stuff that they wouldn't buy otherwise. So he helps us out. I mean, he gives us stuff and it's gotten to the point where I look around and I want to like contribute and give him some money and I can't find anything because I've either already bought it or it's something I'm just not that interested in.
Yeah.
But this, I got it in front of me, this lenticular cover. I just thought this was awesome. I'm still not sure if I'm saying that right.
It's the one with the church scene, right?
It's the church scene, and she's holding the baby, and it's like, you turn it, it's she looks like Mother Mary holding Jesus.
Yes.
But then you turn it just slightly and the light changes and she's like dressed in a snowsuit or something. Looks more like a normal person and he's like a demon. And if you switch it back and forth, it moves around. It's really cool.
Yeah, it's cool.
I used to have toys like this when I was a kid. I'm trying to think of what it was, but I remember when I was a kid, you'd buy stuff that had this sort of
thing. Oh, yeah, I had a bunch of stuff like that, dude. I used to collect comic book trading cards, and
yeah,
that
was
like the thing, either the holographic cards or like the lenticular cards. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and I was thinking like, so this thing was, he was selling them for $30. And I was like, man, I had this stuff on cards when I was a kid and they cost like, you know, a nickel.
Yeah. No, lenticular is a cool thing now, man. Yeah. DC's doing some as well.
Yeah, and he also had a limited number, so these are pretty rare.
Sure. Yeah, I went to the booth and I talked to him and he's like, I got something for you. And he gave me Jimmy's Bastards and Baby Teeth.
Yeah.
Bears for both. I was like, all right, cool, let me pay you. He's like, no. He's like, it's for you. I was like, I was like, Joe, you can't give me stuff, man. I'll pay for it. He's like, no.
That's nice of you. I didn't even offer to pay for the stuff he gave me.
Well, then I looked around the table. The only thing I didn't have was the Dreaming Eagles hardcover.
Yeah.
Which looks really nice. It's oversized.
Yeah. Right.
And I might end up getting it at some point. But
I think it was pretty expensive, though.
Is it? I mean, how much could it be? Like $30, $40,
no,
right?
I think I looked on the back of it, and it was like $70 or something.
Whoa, really?
Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I remember picking it up and thinking, okay, this would be something, because I really wanted to buy something. And even though it wasn't, I know most of you guys love that story, and I liked it. It wasn't my favorite. But it was a really cool hardcover, so I thought I would buy this. And then I saw the price, and I just slowly put it back down.
I was going to say, I might skip out for that price. But, I mean, it's nice, dude. It's cool. Huge. It's huge. So we'll see. If they did like a Black Eyed Kids oversized hardcover, I'd buy the out of that. Oh, put a timestamp on there. No.
I didn't know that.
But, yeah, again, Joe is awesome, as always. Donnie was awesome, as always. I don't talk to Paul a whole lot.
This is my first time talking to Donnie. You've talked to him before?
I talked to him very briefly at C2E2. Yep.
He had a... So when did you talk to him at Heroes?
Right after the panel, he was doing that signing.
At what time?
Like around 4? Two something.
What? Oh, so you didn't talk to him at the booth?
No.
Okay. So I waited for him to come back to the booth, which they had the time on there. It was 4 p.m. I was certain I'd run into you guys at that time. But
he went to the Aftershock booth?
Yeah.
Okay, because he did a signing at the Heroes booth.
Oh. He was busy, man. I mean, when he got to the Aftershock booth, he had a line, I think, longer than any line I saw at the entire convention.
Yeah, he had a pretty good line at the Heroes booth, too, because you could only buy the Heroes Con variant from Heroes, not from Aftershock.
Right. Which was kind of cool. And I made a mistake, because I told Ronnie I would pick him up one, and I decided I'd get one for myself also. I don't buy variants, and I came away with like 4 variants of Baby Teeth.
So, were you able to buy multiples? Because they were doing limit one.
Well, so here's the story. I went, first of all, I got in line. I stood in this long line to talk to him, to get him to sign some stuff. And then I don't know why. I didn't really think about it. I just assumed I'd get up there and buy it when I got up there. But they didn't have them there. You had to go to the front desk when you walk in and buy them from Heroes.
So, see, maybe by that point, because I know they had some there in the morning.
Oh, at the booth?
Yeah, at the Heroes booth.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I was at the Aftershock booth. I assumed they would have some there.
Oh, right. No, yeah, because see, the first thing I did when I got there was go to the Aftershock booth, and I talked to Joe, and Joe said, no, you have to go to the Heroes booth.
Yeah. Yeah, so
I had some, but I'm going to tell you, they had some Friday and sold out. Because one of my friends that was there, he went to ask for it, and they were sold out when he went. But they said they were going to have more the next day, which was Saturday, the day that I was there.
Yeah.
And I saw they had a couple when I swung by there. But yeah, they were limit one. So anyways, you were saying, so your story.
No, so I waited in line, this long 30-minute line, whatever, got up there, assigned myself, and said, hey, let me get one of the variants also. And they're like, oh, no, you got to go to Hero's booth and get that.
So yeah, like, right,
crap.
Right.
So I'm going to have to go get that. And I contemplated getting – I just got my stuff signed by them. So I'm like, I'm just going to get Ronnie's book and leave. But then I was like, man, I can't sign all this stuff and then not get Ronnie's signed also. So I went and got it and had to go back and stand in line like a second time. But my son was with me, so they let me take two. They were like, I just That's need cool. to see two heads. I was like, good, because otherwise I would have, you know, done a lap around the booth and come back and got another one. So, but That's anyways, awesome. I went back and I got him to sign that. I talked with him for a little while, and he said he wants baby teeth to run for like a really long time. He said he says that he had enough ideas for this to go about 50 issues.
Yeah, it's
and
cool.
I took a double take, like, really? But yeah, he's also doing Redneck for Image.
Yep. Have yes, you read he is. That? Yeah, it's really good.
I heard it's really good. I haven't read it. But at Heroes, people were saying great things about it. But he said, like, those are the two titles that he wants to be his focus for the next couple years.
Yeah, he's got a third book coming out, too. I think it's being announced next month.
Okay.
Which, when I post that panel, you'll hear about it if you listen to it.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, he really loves doing Baby Teeth and Redneck. I think he said he's writing issue, like, 15 or 16 of Redneck right now. And I think issue 2 or 3 just came out. So, like, he's really far ahead. He really likes doing it. He seems to really dig Baby Teeth. I mean, he couldn't stop talking about it at that panel. And then that other book he's coming out with, I don't know what it is, but apparently it like freaks the crap out of him when he writes it. Huh. So that's exciting.
What would it take for Baby Teeth to go 50 issues? I mean, it would really have to become a major independent hit, right?
Yeah, people need to buy it.
To what extent? Because there's books like Hickman has East of West, which is like 30 some issues in now, and I doubt that's a huge seller.
I think East of West is ending though, isn't it?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is, or it just ended maybe. It's not a huge seller, but the thing is, like, who does he have to pay? Himself, and the artist, and that's it.
Right.
You know, that's a thing. Like, as long as enough. as long as the book is paying for itself and then some,
yeah,
then there's no reason why they can't continue it. Mm-hmm. You know, and with a smaller publisher, they can probably they can definitely warrant doing books with lower print runs for longer because they don't have a lot of infrastructure to pay for.
Yeah.
You know, you got to think like a Marvel book, if they're selling 20,000 copies, that's getting canceled. Yeah. Right? Because they got to pay everybody overhead. At Disney and everybody up above Marvel, like the execs and all that.
Right.
Like, think about Joe. Like, who does Joe need to pay? You know, like editor-in-chief, the investors himself, mm-hmm. and the creative team. Like, that's a handful of people. So you can be successful as an indie publisher with a lot lower print run.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously you want to sell as much as you can, but you can make do with a lot less.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I wonder if, because like Hickman also, he has the name recognition. At least he did when East of West, when East of West started, he was like big time. Right now, I mean, he's not doing anything. But, so a lot of people latched onto that early on and probably stuck with it. I wonder, does Donnie Cates have, I mean, does he have that big of a name?
I think he's getting there. I mean, he's been in the industry for a long time.
Yeah.
But just now starting to get recognized. Because I remember he used to work for Valiant, not writing books, but he would do like character treatments and story treatments, things like that, when they first relaunched.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
That's not that long ago.
No, it's not.
Yeah, well, I mean, he seemed to be really popular at Heroes. And let me tell you, I didn't get to, I wasn't on the last podcast when you talked about Baby Teeth, but I love this book.
Yeah? You want to share some thoughts?
Well, I mean, I'm sure you guys covered it all, but I this is, to me, this might be my next, this might be my favorite. I mean, if it continues like it seems like it could in this first issue, I think this would be my favorite Aftershock book.
Yeah, it's pretty damn good.
Now, the first issue covered a lot of ground. I mean, it's the whole origin story, so it's going to be interesting to see what he does after this, because he's going to develop these characters, and I don't imagine it's going to be as packed with content as this first issue is. So, but I loved it.
Yeah, it was awesome. And Joe said it did really well. I think it might be their top selling book ever.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what he said.
Okay. Good.
So that's good. It's great.
Yeah, but wait, you know, because some of their other top selling books, for me personally, kind of let me down a little bit, and I was like, why is this the top selling book and not like Black Eyed Kids or something?
No, I agree with that.
I'm glad to hear that, because I get it. This is a really cool story. I think it's well written. It's unique. It's a little bit edgy in its own way. So I think it has a lot of the variables a book could, you know, needs to be successful. So,
yep.
Now I want to read Redneck, though, after reading this.
Yeah, Redneck's good, man. Redneck is good. And God Country, I don't know if you read that. I think that was Image also.
Right. I think I have that.
Yeah, it's really good. Don't skip out on some Donny Cates, man. I'm telling you. He did this book, I think it was for Boom.
I'm thinking of the Matt Kent book.
Oh, Grass Kings?
No. I'm trying to look on my shelf right now to see what I'm thinking of. For God and Country? Was it? Well, go ahead.
I mean, there's a Queen and Country.
That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, that's Rucka.
That's Rucka. No, that's Rucka. That's right.
That's awesome.
That was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago.
I have not read God Country.
But if you like Queen and Country, he's doing, I can't remember what the hell it is. He's got a book out now where it's like a team of like immortal soldiers. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot like Queen and Country.
So does he like these sort of religious themes?
Sure seems that way, right?
I guess.
The way he explained it is like something will happen in his life and he writes a story about that thing.
Okay.
But it's a comic book, and so a lot of times it'll be, you know, like completely misshapen, like you couldn't recognize it as that. Right?
Well, hold on, because Redneck is about vampires, and Baby Teeth is about, like, a demon baby. So what's going on in Donny Cates' life we need to learn about?
So I'll tell you what he was talking about Baby Teeth. So he and his wife have been together for a long time. He said, like, 15 years, I believe.
Okay.
And they don't have kids, right? And so – but they've thought about having kids. But, you know, they feel like they're at a point where, like – how much is their world going to change if they have a kid? Okay. And like, what difference will that make in their life? How is that going to impact them? And so to him, he can translate that feeling into this girl who's lost and, you know, I mean, she's a high school kid and all of a sudden she's got a kid. Like, how does that affect her?
Right.
Right. On top of the fact that he's the Antichrist, but yeah, there's that. And some influence was his brother too. Like his brother had a kid not too long ago. And so just like to be able to experience that kind of from far away, right? It's like I've always heard people say, like, you know, my parents were really crappy parents growing up, but they're awesome grandparents.
Right.
Right. As a grandparent, like you don't have the same responsibilities, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. So you can be a little more fun, a little more loose with the grandkids than you were with your kids, because your kids, that's what you're raising.
Right.
And you know what? You want to instill certain things in them. And yeah, you're doing that with the grandkids too, but you can have a little more fun with your grandkids. So
is it also because like little kids, they can be like, these sweet, innocent angels one moment, and then the next be like a total stubborn, like, demon child.
No doubt about that. No doubt about that. But, yeah, it's interesting.
If that's the case, I could totally relate to this book all of a sudden.
I like the way Donnie thinks.
Yeah.
You know? And it really shows in the books that he writes, like, the kind of mindset that he's in.
Right.
And, like, the kind of things that he really enjoys reading and watching and things like that, they really translate into what he writes.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that, you know, because that makes him a very honest writer. And not every writer is honest when they write their stories.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, Danny, we gave it 5 out of 5 last week.
Did you, both of you did?
Both of us did.
Well, I'm right there with you then. So this might be a good ACP book to keep on top of.
Sure will. Sure will.
This might be our next BK.
It could be. That, a matter of fact, I think I said that last episode. Now that BEK is on hiatus for what, another month, right? Month or two?
Yeah.
You know, we got Baby Teeth. I know you're not a big fan of Pestilence, but I love Pestilence.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite things ever.
That's me. I know you guys both like it. And everybody, all the Valiant guys loved Britannia. I just don't like that genre. I don't know why.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair. You don't have to, dude, you don't have to like everything.
Yeah. And I was also really excited for Colin Bunn. Like, in the back of Baby Teeth, they have a preview for his new Aftershock book, Unholy Grail.
Yep.
But it looks like that same genre.
Yeah, it does. And we can talk about this because last week we were speculating because they hadn't announced a new book, but he's got a second Aftershock book coming out, The Dark Arc.
Ah, right.
Yep.
What's that
which
about?
They had been teasing last week. And they announced it like 5 minutes after I put the episode out. I was like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that looks really cool, too.
What's it about?
It's got, a dark retelling of Noah's Ark.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, wasn't it you that compared it to, what was that book he was doing?
Okay, was that what we were talking, the goddamn, I was talking about Jason Aaron, Goddamned.
Yep, yeah, that's the one.
Wow. Which is this, well, no, the Goddamned is a retelling of Cain and Abel.
Cain and Abel.
Except it's sort of flipped, like Abel, even though he's the bad guy, he's trying to make him into the hero because the world is so, like, messed up at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But in the middle of that is Noah. He runs into Noah, and Noah's doing his whole ark thing. And so he's simultaneously sort of retelling the Noah story.
Yep. Yeah, it looks interesting. And it's one Doe's doing the art.
Oh, of course. He has like half of his books.
That's what I told Joe at the booth. I was like, how does one Doe have any time to do anything? apparently, one Doe's done with World Reader. Like, he had done the whole thing before they put it out.
What do you mean he's done?
Like, all the art for the book is done.
Okay. Is it a miniseries?
I guess. Okay. I think he said it was like, I don't remember what he said. 5-6 issues, maybe? I couldn't remember. But, yeah, he had that whole arc done.
Huh.
And they're like, well, Juan's not doing anything. Let's give him his other book.
Suck segue.
Segway. We did talk about American Monsters a little bit, but I'm not going to put that on the podcast. We can talk about that off the record.
Who did? Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Because, you know, he's doing the American Monster also.
Right.
So he's busy, man. He's busy. Yeah. But anyways, yeah, let's segue. Let's talk about some books.
Yeah.
We have two books, World Reader number 3 mm-hmm. and Jimmy's Bastards number 8 came out last week.
Yep.
I saw Animosity 8 listed, but it didn't come out, so I don't know what's up with that. I should have asked Joe, and I totally forgot about it. But, that's the other thing he's doing. Marguerite is going to do another Animosity of the Rise.
Ah.
And Juan Do's doing the art for that.
Huh. So they're doing the Rough Riders thing, and even though it's the arc of the same story, they're going to put it out as a different title?
I guess so. Well, originally, so Animosity of the Rise is going to be a one-shot.
Oh.
And it was really well received, and apparently Marguerite had a bunch of other stuff she wanted to talk about. So they're doing three Animosity of the Rise one-shots now.
Gotcha.
So two and three. I don't know if they solicited them yet, but they've been announced.
Oh, Animosity is still the second best-selling Aftershock title.
Nice.
Issue 7 was, at least.
Nice.
In May, number 1 was Pestilence.
Yep.
Baby Teeth hadn't come out yet. And then number 2 was Animosity with 6,700. It sounds so low. But hey.
And from what I hear, Jimmy's Bastards did really, really well.
In
like
what
top
month was
five.
That was in June. That was June, though, so I don't see that. I'm looking at May.
Yeah.
Eleanor and the Egret was 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine that holding, to be honest. I don't see it staying at number 3.
Well, you know, Sam Keith's got a lot of fans. I'm included in that group, so you know, I'll buy whatever he does.
Right. Well, I'm not saying it because it's bad. It just doesn't seem like something that would have broad appeal.
Oh, sure. Yeah, but you know what? The creative teams do, and they have very loyal fans. So.
Yeah. So that's 1 through 3. What do you think number 4 was?
For what month?
May.
For May.
It's another person with a big name. What's the next biggest name on any Aftershock title?
Oh, God, I don't know. I would have said Paul Jenkins, but I don't think he had a book then. I don't know. What was it?
Warren Ellis.
Oh, of course.
Shipwreck.
Of course.
And then after that was Normals. Normals number 5, which is too bad. I guess
that is too bad.
Because that was the number 1. I expected a number 1 to be a little higher.
Yeah, people should be reading that. It's really good.
Yeah, so I've got my fingers crossed that when June comes out, Baby Teeth will be number 1.
Anyways, let's get back on track. So, all right, let's go ahead and do World Reader then, so we segued into that. Let's see. Who's doing that? Oh, Loveless. Jeff Loveless on writing.
Yep.
Juan Do on art.
Yep.
And I don't know the rest of the team because I don't have the book in front of me.
Letters are Rachel Deering.
That's right.
And that's it.
Oh.
I mean, Mike Martz is the editor, but doesn't Mike Martz edit everything for Aftershock? Yeah.
So what were you number 3? I'm trying to think of the nutshell recap. It picks up directly from last issue. Mm-hmm. But anyway, she takes Kirby, and that I remember because I'm sure it's based on Jack Kirby. She takes Kirby, the spaceship, out to this other planet to see what's going on. And that's where things pick up in this issue. But what's really interesting is, for the first time, we get a lot of backstory into how she got into this program to find alien life.
Yeah.
Which is cool. Like, we hadn't seen any of that. It's just kind of been, you know, them floating from planet to planet to see if they can find life. Now we find out how she got here, what Earth is like, kind of, what her powers are, and why she's so dead set on continuing this mission, even though the rest of the team wants to go back home. So it turns out that she lost somebody in her life, and his name is Paul. And I remember that because the episode, the issue title is Paul. And of course, one of my best friends is named Paul. So we won't tell him he's in this book, though. I don't want to get the wrong idea. But she lost this person. My assumption is through whatever's going on Earth, because you get some hints of it, but not completely. But whatever's happening on Earth, like the environment sucks, it's super polluted. I'm assuming there's been a lot of wars, because when they have that shot of NASA, looks like it's in a desert.
Right.
So, you know, I'm assuming global warming, climate's changed quite a bit.
She says at one point that the whole world is sick. And she doesn't really say exactly what that is, but something
We can assume global warming and pollution, right?
Sure.
I think it's...
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah.
what they don't explain is her powers.
But now, hold on, because I thought there was some common force destroying all these worlds, and I assumed that it might be responsible for Earth as well.
Well, yes, because there's that one panel where it looks like she's surrounded by a bunch of creatures.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When she's talking about her abilities, she's surrounded by all these creatures, and it looks like creatures very similar to the creature she saw in one of her dreams in last issue at this alien planet. So, yeah, it might be a group of beings that are traveling around the universe, maybe like sucking the life out of planets.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, like fourth dimensional or something. So you can't see them unless you have the special ability.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. Like, this is getting like super hardcore sci-fi, which I dig. You know, at first it was great, but it was a little soft. And now that we're some world building, getting to see what's happening, like, it's getting pretty hardcore sci-fi. And I really dig it. Really, really dig it. But what they don't explain too much is these abilities, because she's not the only person that has the ability. What would you call her ability?
She's not. I thought she's the only person we've seen so far, right?
She's the only person we've seen, but I thought when she's talking to the lady from NASA, she talks about how there's a lot of people that like pretend to have this power and abuse it.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people that pretend to have this power and abuse it, but she knows that she's the real deal because she doesn't want it and she doesn't flaunt it.
See, now I read this differently. I thought she was talking about other people, like, you're depressed, other people have depression, but I know you're not, like, crazy, or just, I know this is not just a mental thing because she believes in her power, like, she's different. Huh. Like, she has a reason to be depressed, not to offend, like, people who are...
Because that whole scene happens at the hospital after she tries to kill herself.
Right. Right.
So yeah, I guess that could be a good interpretation too. See, the way I saw it is they were talking about the powers, and how that's the reason she wanted to commit suicide. And my assumption is that not only is whatever is happening on Earth not only is it destroying the planet, but it's also like changing people in some way, like giving them abilities.
Huh.
And she was one of those people.
I think you're reading into it.
I could be. I could very well be. But anyway, really cool, like, sequence of panels explaining all that history. How she gets into NASA, how she's training, how nobody wants her there because she's not a scientist, right? She doesn't have a bunch of PhDs. She hasn't been in the space program or worked for NASA or any of the armed forces. Like, she's just kind of a girl with psychic abilities.
Right.
And so everybody that's there just kind of, I don't know, snubs her off. Like, she's not important. But she trains really hard because she ends up believing in her abilities and that her abilities can make a difference into what's happening on the planet.
Right.
Which is awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
And then we see her going into space, even though nobody in her team wants her there. And again, we kind of already know that, but now we know that this has been like an ongoing thing, right? And it's not necessarily her fault either.
Yeah.
Just these people are being a-holes, really.
Well, yeah, the guy who's sort of leading this mission never wanted her on the mission to begin with.
Right.
So it's not like they're just figuring out she's crazy now. He thought that from the beginning, and they sort of forced him to take her because the other lady that we just mentioned believed in her ability and thinks she'll do some good while she's out there.
Well, and so the weird thing was they talk about the planning of this mission and how NASA has found a bunch of habitable planets.
Right. It's the classic story, right? Where Earth is dying and we got to find somewhere else to go.
Yep. What was the movie with Matthew McConaughey. It was really good.
Interstellar? Is that
Interstellar,
right?
Yeah. Yep. It's a lot like that, except in that team, everybody likes each other for the most part. But, and so she believes in her, but they know that none of these planets are habitable. But I think that's kind of...
Do they know that, or are they finding that out when they get there?
No, I thought that the head lady said that in one of the panels.
Did she?
But that nobody knows that the planets are habitable but don't have any life in them. She wants her there to find out why there's no life there.
Okay.
I'm not sure how they know all of this stuff, but whatever, it doesn't matter. Really cool. So she's on this planet. After we get all the whole flashback scene, we find her buddy that's been kind of her champion in the first couple of issues. He shows up to quote-unquote rescue her. Mm-hmm. Not really to rescue her. We'll get to that. But he shows up, and she's like, how'd you find me? And he's like, Kirby sent me your coordinates, even though you told Kirby, to go radio silent. But she's kind of happy that he's there, but also a little upset. She's like, I don't want to be saved. And she's like, I believe in the mission and I'm here. I need to find out what happened here. And he's like, I'm not here to save you. He's like, I'm here because I believe in you. He's like, nobody else believes in you, but I believe in you. Right. And they share a kiss, which was a little weird.
Felt the romance stuff felt a little forced to me.
Yeah. I didn't like that. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
That happened. But whatever, it's fine.
I did like, though, this scene. I think it's the same page where... So Kirby, which is like their version of... their version of Jarvis. Like, he controls the spaceship that they're on and controls everything, and they can talk to him. Anyways, Kirby allows him to come back to get her, even though she told him to jam everything. And I like this. It made me laugh where... he figured out that Kirby kind of lied, and he's like, wait, he lied to you? And he's like, well, didn't you know he could do that? And he's like, no. He's like, wow, is Kirby going to kill us all now?
Well, yes and no. I mean, you got to think about this AI. I'm sure they programmed the AI for maximum survivability, right? So if she told him not to send any radio transmissions out, but he knows if she's there by herself, she doesn't have food, right? Like, they talk about this when they're going to the planet. They don't have any supplies. Like, she wants to visit two planets. They barely have enough to go to one planet.
Yeah.
I'm assuming there's no fuel either. So,
he has to break protocol.
He's not breaking protocol. He's going against her orders to abide by his protocol.
To a higher protocol or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's like, you know about Asimov's rules, right? Like, don't harm any humans. Well, like, how can you take that as the ultimate goal in the mission?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's a higher order than don't tell anybody where I'm at. Well, I won't tell anybody until I know that if I don't tell anybody, you're going to die.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's necessarily evil. Sure. I think it makes total sense.
Oh, yeah. Well, he was – in the comic, though, it read like he's making a joke.
Yeah, right.
Like, he lied to you? Now what's he going to do? Is he going to come kill us all?
Yeah. No, it's cool. And that's, those are both sci-fi tropes. And so that's why I think the book is really well done. But what else happens in the book? Did I miss something?
No. They just that – so the very last page – and this was weird for me because I'm reading on this preview copy. I guess we can mention preview copies, right?
Yeah.
You get those when you podcast.
Yeah, they're not secrets.
So I'm reading on this preview copy, and the last frame, and if you don't know what a preview copy is, it's like a low-resolution version of it that people who are writing reviews or podcasting or whatever can see sometimes early. So they can have stuff ready. But it has these Aftershark watermarks all over it.
Yep.
Just to make it really hard for somebody to try to resell this or something.
Yep.
But that last frame, they're pointing. What happens is all of a sudden after they kiss and do all this stuff, that seemed a little bit forced. They're startled by something they see in the distance. And she's like, oh, God, what is that? And he says, look, it's a, he says, oh, I've seen that symbol before.
Oh, I've seen that symbol before, yeah.
Now, but here was the weird part about it. When I looked up, all I saw was the big Aftershock watermark. And I was like, what's going on here? Is Aftershock planning to destroy the universe?
See, dude, I've read so many preview copies with watermarks on them.
Yeah, you got
that
used
I don't
to
even
it.
See them anymore.
Really?
Yeah, I don't even see them anymore.
Well, the way this is drawn, it's sort of maybe it's just because it's low resolution, but the art looks a little bit faded.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like crystal clear art; it's a little bit slightly abstract. So the watermark was just as prevalent as the mark they were looking at on the tree, but way bigger.
Mm-hmm. You know what I thought about when I saw the watermark or the symbol on the mountain? It was a volcano, I think, maybe. It looked like the halo symbol.
Oh.
Yeah. I was like, they're going to go play Halo now.
But
cool.
We've seen this before also. Wasn't it in one of the first couple issues?
Yeah, sure was.
I don't remember where, but...
Yep, it sure was.
Yeah, but I agree. This was definitely my favorite issue out of the three.
And out of the three, by far.
The first two, I was sort of iffy on it. I liked what they were, I liked the idea, but I really wasn't sold on the way the story had been told so far.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, I loved it.
Agreed. I loved it as well. What's your rating on this one?
Just this issue, right? Not the whole...
Just this issue, yeah.
I'll give it a 4.5. I would not give the whole run so far that high of a mark.
No, I wouldn't either. I think I gave the first two 4, maybe.
Okay.
Or maybe a 3.75. But yeah, this is definitely a 4.5. It was freaking awesome.
Yeah.
All that exposition that we get and all right. the flashback scenes are amazing.
Yeah.
Yep, agreed. Agreed.
So if Jeff's listening... We want more of this.
That's
an issue 1 and 2.
I hear you. I like 1 and 2, but this is definitely more up my alley.
Well, sometimes you need outside. Issue 1 and 2 to get to a 3.
Absolutely. Cool. I don't know what Ronnie's rating is because he didn't tell us.
Yeah, he didn't get
your rating. We're going to assume he hated it.
Yeah. What no, did you really... just give it? You gave it a 4.5?
4.5, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's Ronnie's as well. When he's not here, we speak for him.
That's right. Next up is Jimmy's Bastards, #1.
Oh, my God. I don't know what to say about this.
It's written by Garth Ennis.
Yep.
With art by Russell Brown.
Russ Braun.
Braun, that's right, Braun. I'll let you talk about this one a little bit because I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, all I know is what the crap did I just read?
Yeah, that's exactly what you told us in our private chat. You read it and you said, what the hell did I just read?
Yeah.
Now, I'm curious, though, why? Because I thought the story was pretty straightforward.
It's just weird. The story is weird. Right? So he's like... So he's like this sort of drawn Don Draper looking guy, right?
Yep, right.
And he's all slick and he's all smug and snarky at the same time. And he's fighting these weird villains. And
yes,
there's a monkey
very weird
with villain. Like that has a human brain sticking out of his
yep.
skull, and he's fighting them. But really, the bulk of the story revolves around him being sort of this. He's a womanizer, right?
Yes.
And he sleeps around with all these women. That's his lifestyle. He's like, I guess he's a good guy by fighting all these villains, but really he's with all these women nonstop. The women he works with, he's sleeping. When he goes home, there's women everywhere that he's making out with, and it the end of this book totally threw me. Because I thought they were just setting this guy up to be, that was going to be his character, okay? He's this womanizer, smug, smart, kind of snarky guy that fights bad guys,
mm-hmm.
right? And I was wondering, like, am I supposed to like this character or not? Because sometimes there's stories where a good guy is like purposely unlikable.
Yes.
But in others, they're like trying to get you to like a personality that you might not normally like.
Right.
And I thought it was going to be something like that. Okay, he's going to be this womanizer guy. I don't like his personality, but he's going to go save the day or whatever. And I couldn't tell what was going on. So the end of the way this book ends is not has nothing to do with that. It's like there's this doomsday like cult that's meeting at the very end of the book, and they turn out to be everybody in the cult is like his offspring.
Correct.
It looks like there's a room of like 100 people, and
yes,
they have one mission, and the mission is get daddy. Like, we want revenge. I don't know why, but I mean, I guess I don't know why they want revenge. I mean, he's the reason they exist, even if he's like a creep or whatever. But for whatever reason, they want to get daddy. And to make it even weirder, he's there. I don't know why, but I think Jimmy himself is at this meeting. And one of the panels, okay, I'm going to read this. They show his face and he says, he's like egging him on. He's like, the man who effed off and left us to it. Yes. Oh, yes. You know it to be true. And he's talking about himself. And his coworker, the other private investigator or whatever they are, he has her sort of in disguise in the middle of all his offspring doing something. And we don't know what it is. So that's why I said, what in the world is them I reading?
This all is right, chaotic. So let me try to explain some things to you.
Okay. Educate me because I'm lost.
I think you're missing some things.
Okay.
Before I say that, though, I want to say, I know Garth Ennis loves doing the war stuff. I know it's very popular for him. But I love this Garth Ennis. Okay, the Garth Ennis that writes whatever the hell he feels like writing,
yeah,
and doesn't give two shits about what he's writing. Okay, and I mean that in like as a compliment.
Right.
Not like doesn't give two shits because he's just out to get a paycheck for this book. Like, doesn't give two shits as in he writes what he wants and doesn't care what anybody's gonna say about it. Okay, and I think those kind of stories when he writes them are his best stories.
Yeah.
Because if you can overlook certain things, they're the most fun. And this book is a ton of fun. Okay. Now, I was confused at first when he's fighting all those guys on the Zeppelin. Okay. The monkey and the fat girl.
Yeah.
And that weird magician guy.
Yeah.
The twirly mustache guy. I was a little confused because none of them speak like in complete sentences. They all speak in non sequiturs.
And neither does Martin.
Okay, yeah, exactly. they all speak in non sequiturs, and it's full of profanity.
Yeah. Right.
So I was confused there too. Before I continue, though, I'll get back to your thing. This is Garth Ennis writing James Bond.
Okay. Yeah. Okay?
So this guy is a secret agent for MI6. Or MI5, whichever one it is. I can't remember which one does it.
I think it was 6.
Yeah, I know they've got a 5 and a 6. I don't know what the difference is. I'm not British. If there's any British listeners, feel free to tell me. I'm not going to Google it.
This is based in London, by the way.
It is, yes. So he's a super secret spy for the British government. These guys that he was fighting are villains.
Right.
Okay? And I don't know how familiar you are with James Bond movies, but they're all set up this way, right? Like, the villains are all super hokey.
Yeah.
They're not like serious villains.
Yeah.
Regardless of how evil they might be, they're just kind of caricatures of real people. And I mean, James Bond in many ways is as well.
Yeah.
And the thing with James Bond is he is a womanizer. Okay. But you don't see it like you see it in this book.
Right.
Okay. It's a little more, a lot more toned down.
Is it?
It is. I mean, there's the sexy time stuff.
Oh, right.
But it's almost like, okay. So, all right, so it's like this. So the James Bond movie would be like a story as if a historian wrote it, okay? Whereas the real story might be a lot raunchier, right? So like I don't know, let's just say like George Washington. Okay. So from history, like, do you ever think of George Washington like doing anything bad?
No, of course not. Like, he wouldn't dare.
Yeah, in the history books, it's like a super serious dude. Like, he defects from Britain. He wants the U.S. to be its own country. Like, right. Go USA. We got to kick out the British. We're not paying taxes or whatever. Yeah. All this crap.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, the dude was a guy. He was a person, right?
Yeah, or like Christopher Columbus, who we celebrate a national holiday over, but he also took, like, child slaves and gave them to his men.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all these people like messed right. around with their wives, and they had slaves, and you know, they embezzled money and like all kinds of stuff.
Right.
But a lot of that's not in the official history books, right? Yeah. So it's the same thing. Like, a James Bond movie is like the history book, and then like this is what actually happens.
Okay.
You know, James Bond is kind of a douchebag. He doesn't care about anybody except himself. Like, he thinks he's awesome, that he's a hero. You know, and he feels like he should get, you know, whatever he wants for it. And usually what he wants is women.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've ever watched the TV show Archer. But no. I know Ronnie and I were talking a little bit about this in our private chat. Like, this Jimmy's Bastards is like if they put Archer into a comic book. Because the same premise, Archer's a secret spy. He's got these mustache twirling villains that he fights. He wants to sleep around with everybody. He's kind of a douchebag. Yeah. He's not very bright, right? But, like, even when he messes up, like, things go his way. and that's pretty much how Jimmy is.
Yeah.
Right? It's funny, too. Like, he even looks a little bit like Archer. And for anybody that doesn't know what I'm talking about, I think it's on FX. It's on, like, season 7 or 8.
Huh.
It's a cartoon.
Okay.
For adults.
I thought the first time I saw him, I was like, okay, this is Don Draper.
I think Archer's on Netflix.
Okay.
Go watch an episode or two, and then tell me if you don't agree that this is Archer.
Okay.
But, all right, so we get a lot of background on who this guy is, what he does for a living, who the main characters are.
Yeah, that all makes sense. But I want to hear your explanation of the ending.
So I'm getting to that. So we get introduced to his new handler.
Right.
And I'll come back to that in a second. So the Doomsday Cult is not a Doomsday Cult, even though it seems that way at first. Right. Like, you would expect a group of mustache twirling villains getting together.
Right.
Okay,
right,
to try to commit some super crime. Okay. And as it turns out, when they post this picture up on the TV screen, they're out to get Daddy.
Yeah.
They say that quite a bit, so you know what the mission is. Now, in terms of the guy, I didn't think that was Jimmy. I think that's one of his kids. So all these people are his kids. And if you read the solicits, you would know that, because I'm pretty sure they said it in the solicits, how he's going to be going up against all his illegitimate children.
Okay. Ah, I got you.
Which, of course, makes sense, right? Like, he's traveling around the world having sex with all these women. Like, he's going to have kids. Mm-hmm. And they're all going to hate him because, first of all, he is a douchebag.
So,
second of all, he was never a dad to them.
Now, the reason I thought it was him, at first I didn't think it was him. When I got to the very last page and they show his picture when they're all saying, get Daddy, and they have a big poster of him.
Yep.
One of the guys takes off his hood and looks... I mean, their two pictures are side by side. He looks identical to him. But what you're saying is probably right, now that I think about it. It's probably just a son that looks a lot like his father.
Yep. Well, and I think that was kind of to drive the point, right? Because, I mean, they're all chanting, get Daddy.
Yeah.
But if you look at all those people, like, they all look very different. You know, there's, like, bearded guys, skinny guys, fat guys, bald guys. There's women. There's men. There's, like, tattooed people, non-tattooed people. Yeah, there's some kind of, like, Asian. Right. Yeah, there's biracial kids. So, since we talk about biracial kids, that his new handler is one of his kids.
Yeah.
Which you kind of get hinted at when you first meet the cult, and then you see her in the crowd. But when you first meet the cult and those cult members are talking, they're talking about, you know, like, she got in there.
Yeah.
She's working with him, but she hates it. She's getting cold feet. There's like the sexual innuendo, incest talk, and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. Because of course she's a girl; he doesn't know it's his kid, so he tries to sleep with her like immediately.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
And she's like, "I'm not interested." He's like, "Oh no, I know you're not interested." He's like, "I can tell when a woman doesn't want me."
Right.
Yeah. Which, by the way, if you watch Archer, exactly what happens in Archer.
Okay.
Awesome. It's awesome. I'm telling you, you need to go watch Archer. They're going to be like, ah, now I understand Jimmy's Bastards.
Right.
But, yeah, so all his kids have gathered together somehow. I'm sure we'll find out how to kill him.
Yeah.
So does that make more sense to you now?
Well, I mean, I get – no, the first part – the second part you said the same thing I did. Almost, except that it was his son. The first part, I didn't pick up on any of the James Bond similarities.
Gotcha.
But now that you say that, it makes total sense.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of obvious because they go into the lab. Yeah. They got the gadgets there and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, I did pick up on something that was obvious. Rub it in.
Well, maybe you haven't watched as many James Bond films as I have.
I haven't. Awesome. I remember when I was a kid, my dad always wanted to go see every James Bond movie. And I was like, oh, man, we got to see another one? It was just like the last one.
Yep. They're all very similar. So, it's really interesting. I thought it was really well written. It's freaking hilarious.
Now, did the way this ended, though, with all his children and all that, did you not think that was just extremely peculiar and odd?
Well, I mean, why wouldn't it be? You remember how the book opened, right?
Yeah.
He's in a blimp fighting a monkey with a human brain on top of his head.
Yeah, but that's sort of comic booky stuff, okay? Like, you read DC and it's like, okay, here's a guy fighting a shark man or whatever. You know? Yeah. I mean, it's like, I'm used to seeing that stuff. I'm not used to seeing, like, a cult of people's offspring because he's a womanizer plotting to kill him. So,
yeah.
To me, that I'm not even saying this in a bad way. I'm saying it was like weird to the point like I might dream about this tonight. It was so peculiar.
Yeah, it is different, but you know, if you're familiar with his stuff, it's not that far off,
right?
You know. So I thought it was interesting.
Now, the weird part for me is going to be because, like, maybe I'm getting old, but, like, I could do without the lewdness, right? And I now, if they're driving a point, which he's trying to do clearly with the direction this story took, then I'm fine with it. But now, if every issue is, like, filled with him getting blowjobs or whatever, can I say that on a podcast?
Yeah, why not?
Then I'm going to be like, okay, it's going to start to annoy me. You know what I mean? Like, they drove the point home, but are they going to show those scenes every issue?
I mean, they might.
So I'm curious to see how that develops. Because if it does, I might lose interest. But
see, those kind of things don't bother me, though. And you got to remember, like, he's a British writer, and their standard of lewdness is quite a bit different in Europe than it is here.
Yeah.
You know? In the U.S., we're very puritanical, so you kind of don't want a lot of profanity, penis, or things like that.
I don't know what it is, because, like, we watch Orange is the New Black, and I don't mind. I mean, they're in a prison. It seems normal for all that stuff to be going on. Some reason in comics, it gets to be more.
Hmm.
Like, I just don't like seeing it. Like, I don't like seeing
Southern Bastards is your favorite book.
Huh?
I said, and yet Southern Bastards is your favorite book.
But again, in context, if it's in context. Now, there's some Image is notorious for creating stories and showing, like, male genitalia, like, for no reason. And Eric Powell, I love The Goon early on. It was literally, like, one of my favorite comics early on. But it got weirder and weirder, and his story started doing that to the point where, okay, now I'm just being lewd for no reason except for the sake of giving you something to be like to freak out about when you turn the page. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that, after a while, I lose interest. But I don't think that's what this is going to do. I think there's a purpose
like that,
for this.
Though. Like, I don't know if you I listen to a lot of podcasts, and a lot of them are talking about the new Twin Peaks show.
Yeah.
I've never seen Twin Peaks in my life, so I don't know. I tried to watch an episode, and I hated it. But I mean, I liked other David Lynch stuff before, so
yeah,
maybe it's just this one show. But I think that's one thing he does is a lot of times he just does weird things just to do weird things.
Ennis or Powell?
No, I'm talking about Lynch.
Okay.
Twin Peaks.
Gotcha.
Like my wife loves David Lynch.
Yeah.
But she hates Eraserhead. Okay. Because like it's him to the extreme, to the point where like it's not even cohesive.
Okay.
Right. But a lot of people love that film because it's very artsy. And I think maybe it's kind of the same feeling you're having. Like maybe you feel like it's okay to use it to establish something, but you don't want more of it.
Right.
And to me, knowing his past work and his past work, it doesn't bother me because it feels like typical Ennis stuff.
Yeah, I hear you. I've never been a big Ennis fan. You know, but I did really enjoy this. And any time a comic makes me say, like, what the crap did I just read, then that's usually a good thing because it's doing something I'm not used to. Mm. And there's been so many comics that it's hard. It's kind of getting hard to do that.
Yeah, yeah. You want to rate this one up?
Oh, sure. Oh, geez. You go. Go ahead.
Me? Tough.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'm gonna go ahead and go quite a bit lower on this. I'm gonna do a 3.75 on this one.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. I think because it's weird. Like based on everything I've said, I should give this a 5. And don't get me wrong. I you know what? I have to change it because I really did love this book. And I laughed the entire time I was reading it.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
I can't go higher than that because just based on the stuff from the first issue, I don't know what the meat is yet. If that makes sense.
Right.
Right? And I'm not talking about his meat. I'm talking about the meat of the story.
You beat me to it.
Because as much as I enjoyed it, I mean, I love the art, I love the writing. I didn't care, profanity or not, doesn't matter. I love Ennis' stuff. And this was hilarious, dude. Like, from the first panel to the end, I was laughing the whole time I was reading it. But I don't want it to be just that.
Yeah.
You know? And right. I compared it to Archer, and I mean, that's pretty much how Archer's been for the past, whatever, 6-7 years that it's been on TV. And it's always the same thing, but somehow they manage to escalate it where it keeps it interesting. And I hope that that's what we get here.
Yeah.
And if it involves some of the same jokes and tropes, then I'm okay with it as long as they can keep advancing it.
Okay. Okay. Well, I guess I'll take still your first score then and give it a 3.75 because I wanted to give it a low score.
Mm-hmm.
But by the time I finished this, I was like, man, I enjoyed this a lot more than I expected to. And all the like, what the crap am I reading moments, just, I don't know. It made it enjoyable. So, but yeah. I mean, at the same time, it's not something I would normally read. I don't know. I got to see more.
No,
and I almost feel bad giving it a 3.75 because I enjoyed reading it more than a normal book I would give it. Normally, that's a book that I enjoyed a little bit, but not a ton.
Yep.
I mean, I enjoyed it more than that. It's, I don't know, just something about it. I don't want to give it a higher score until I read maybe a full arc.
Fair enough. I think that's it.
Yeah.
That's going to wrap it up for us, I believe. Ronnie just texted and said he's on the way home. Well, guess what, Ronnie? Too bad. We're done.
Hey, guys, I'm ready to podcast.
Oh, Ronnie's home. Let's hang up. No, I'm just kidding. This has been episode 26 of Aftershock Central. Jack's at Jack Sutherland. Ronnie's at Rumbar316. I'm at Geekvine. The show is at Aftershock Pod. I want to give a heads up. I'm redoing our website, which means all our feeds are going to change. If you listen through iTunes or Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, any of those things, you're fine. It shouldn't affect you. But if you're old school and you still use RSS feeds, you might need to change that. So just a heads up. That'll be probably in a couple weeks. But I'll keep reminding people on every podcast, on every episode. I guess until the next time, go get daddy. We'll get rolling. Let me sit up. My wife broke her bed this morning.
Oh, man.
Yeah. She sent me a picture. I was like, what the f-?
She's probably not happy about that.
I know. I got to go buy another bed now. Hmm.
Y'all need to take it easy.
No, it wasn't that. She was...